Leonard Bernstein, who would have turned 95 this year, was a champion talker.
Three G's and an E-flat. Nothing more.
Good at talking to a crowd.
Anyone might have thought of them, maybe. But out of them has grown...
I had been very lucky in the teachers I had had when I was...
Good also at talking to just one person.
Back at the Boston Latin School.
In 1983, author and critic Tim Page did an interview with the great composer, conductor, educator, then 65.
There's also the background of my father, who was...
Bernstein talks about his influences, especially that of his father, a very serious Talmudic scholar.
And who was ready at the drop of a hat to quote you chapter and verse from the scriptures. He'd say, pass the salt. He'd say, very interesting. Said, because, you know, Rabbi so-and-so, Ben so-and-so pointed out that when Lot's wife was turned to a pillar of salt, whatever it was.
But the most interesting part of it is Bernstein's answer to his critics, the ones who say he indicated too much in his music making. He was too obvious, they said, too busy showing people the inner workings of music instead of making it work as a composition. Bernstein's response?
But what am I going to do? I am cursed with this need to teach.
Cursed or not, he needed to teach and he needed to talk. It's hard to think of any musical figure who talked so much during his career, and it's possible to hear him doing that in every form, including rehearsals. Listen to this lovely clip of a Brahms rehearsal with the London Symphony Orchestra.
Short, sharp chords. Not short enough, not sharp enough, and not together in the winds.
All manner of communication was as natural to him as could be. And what did Leonard Bernstein do at the end of a long day of music making, talking, and otherwise communicating?
One or two things I must tell you about this. First, this
after living his extraordinary high-profile, high-intensity, high-emotion life, he went home and sat and wrote about it. 10,000 letters were told in the archive, 600 of which have now been collected in this new volume of correspondence between Bernstein and every 20th century cultural figure you can imagine. You can read him on page 18 of the new book, writing to his friend Aaron Copland about the rise of Adolf Hitler. It's March 1938, and Bernstein is questioning the very essence of his chosen work in the face of fascism and a likely war. So he writes, why practice Chopin mazurkas? Why practice even the Copland variations, he writes to Copland. This week has made me so sick, Aaron, that I can't breathe anymore. The whole superfluousness of art shows up at a time like this, writes Bernstein, and the whole futility of spending your life in it. Bernstein concludes the rant. It's a damn dirty disappointment. The feeling didn't last, though. Bernstein found the resolve and the energy to stay in art and keep talking and to keep writing. Nearly 20 years later, page 373, he's in ecstasy over the success of West Side Story, and he writes to Felicia Montealegre, his wife. It's all too exciting. I never dreamed it could be like this. Reviews such as one would write for oneself. The whole town up and doing about the show. Delicious long lines at the box office. Morale high. Dignitaries every night. And so on. And that's what it is. It's Bernstein questioning and agonizing over and celebrating and reveling in and squeezing every last drop out of his life. Doing all of the things that made him everything but a specialist. And trying to do them all well. Not so easy as time went on, says Bernstein in this same interview from 1983.
I've always had a problem about time. I mean, I would go on concert tours and compose in the airport or on the plane or on the train. I wrote half of The Age of Anxiety in airports and trains and hotels. I can't do that anymore.
Not so easy to pull off these shifts from one highly exacting kind of work to another, as from high-stakes conducting to high-profile composing.
The better you become as a composer, the harder it is for you to go back and be chameleon-like, assuming, assumptive of other composers' molecules and corpuscles and atomic structures.
Not always as facile as he may have seemed. And these letters kind of turn the tables, too. For the longest time, it seemed reasonable to assume Leonard Bernstein fit his family and friends in between his work schedule. This outpouring of letters to wife, children, brother, Betty Davis, Jackie Kennedy, Thornton Wilder, Serge Koussevitzky, James M. Cain, Frank Sinatra, Yevgeny Yevtushenko, Benjamin Britten, this collection makes you feel the opposite, that Bernstein fit his working life into a huge, ever-connected network of friends and colleagues. His pull to stay connected and in touch by mail, it seems almost too obvious to point out, is now, in another form, our national and international pastime. And of course, another current obsession, storytelling, was also a Bernstein thing. And he got it from his father, I guess. Someone would say, "Pass the salt," and there was Lenny saying, "Oh, that reminds me," and spinning out the tales of his endless escapades and thoughts in any way possible, from the podium, through the mail, on the phone, on television, in a classroom, in his music, and in thousands of letters, and always in his own inimitable voice. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.